Thank you. Yes, my name is Ken Barton. I'm with the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, and I'm glad to be here to be able to share with you this exciting new program that the industry has formed. And, you know, before I get into the nuts and bolts of the program, a lot of people ask the question of what's the definition of sustainability? Seems to be a definition that is a lot of people have different ideas about it. But as far as our program, we've adopted the UN, United Nations definition of it, and which is meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And that's what we're all about as far as our program. And it's not advancing. No. Still working on advancing it. Ready now? Okay, so we've been on a journey as far as our industry. You know, it started back in the 1970s. Our producers and they've been increasing their management and environmental practices. And as a lot of us know in this room, that the starting in the 70s, you had government laws and regulations that kind of directed the producer to work on his operation more, as well as through the years, we've seen advancements in technology, which has helped as far as their practices. And then you've seen new practices that have emerged. An example would be no-till to conservation practices like that, as well as cover crops. And so, you know, so our producers have been on this journey, and they've been on this walk of sustainability. Now, before I was fortunate enough to receive this job with the council, I was a cotton merchant, and so I visited with some of my producers from the past about this, and I was talking to them about their journey of sustainability, and one of them started laughing. He says, "Ken, I call that being surviving. You know, it's not sustainable, it's surviving." And I said, "Yeah, but it's and he says, "But I see what you're talking about. These practices are helping us where we're getting better and better each year." Now, in 2006, another part of our journey to sustainability would be the field to market. And field to market, it's a the Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture focuses on defining, measuring, and advancing the sustainability of commodity crop production. And in 2006, this group was formed by 12 to 15 people in a room, and it was you had some brands and retailers, as well as you had some civil societies, you had some commodities, and so they were all getting around a table to talk about ways as far as advancing sustainable as far as in ag. In that room was National Cotton Council and Cotton Incorporated. So we were involved in the from the beginning of this this organization. It's based out of Washington, D.C. It's not for profit, and it's a great program that's grown through the years. It's they have many brands and retailers, many academia, and you just name it. It's grown, and you can see up there with let's see if I can point. There's Cotton Incorporated, National Cotton Council, Texas Tech. My university, Auburn, is over there. Side note, last year I won a basketball pool because I selected Texas Tech and Auburn to be in the Final Four. So, but all of those groups, though, it's uniting the supply chain to deliver sustainable outcomes for agriculture. And one key part of this program, it's called the Fieldprint Platform. And it's this platform provides where a producer can enter field-level data, both quantitative and qualitative information, into this platform, where then once he's finished entering the information, it then provides him a pentagram, or they call it spidergram, showing the environmental footprint of his operation. It's kind of hard to see this, but there's a better one later on in my slide deck, but this is showing the cotton as a whole, how the environmental footprint through the years every five-year period from this National Indicator Report that the field and market get. It's showing how the practices are changing and how it is making a difference. Now, as far as the journey again with our industry, 2013, the Cotton Leads Program was formed, and this was a way to convey our sustainable practices to brands and retailers and manufacturers across the world. Cotton Leads is part of the Cotton Incorporated, and it has done a fantastic job, and it not only has done this for the U.S. cotton industry, but also Australia. And there's over 500 partners in the Cotton Leads program. We fast forward a couple of years to 2017. Our industry leaders were hearing where brands and retailers were wanting more information, that in order for brands and retailers to make impact claims, they needed something to back up those claims. And so, so they were needing some more data, more information, and so Conference USA Sustainability Task Force was developed. And this task force involved many people across the supply through our group, from producers to cottonseed, merchants, ginners, cooperatives, warehouse, manufacturers, and advisors. And this task force, they were trying to see what they needed to do in order to help these brands and retailers. And, the first thing they did, they came up with a message of continuous improvement, how we need to, year in and year out, see what we can do about getting better as an industry and producing our cotton. Now, they also set environmental goals, and these goals are benchmarked against that National Indicator Report from Field to Market. And you might not be able to read it in your booklet or on the screen, but I'll read it out to you. Soil carbon, the goal is to increase soil carbon by 30%, to increase land use efficiency by 13%, to decrease greenhouse gas emissions by 39%, and decrease soil loss per acre by 50%, water use by 18%, and energy use by 15%. And these goals, once the field to market comes out with their 2025 report, then we'll measure, see how we stand as an industry against those goals. Now, Rod Snyder, who is the president of Field to Market, he commends the Sustainability Task Force because no other commodity, until recently, no other commodity has ever placed lofty goals on themselves as what the Sustainability Task Force did. Now, by achieving those goals, the environmental footprint will shrink. And this shows a little bit better graphic of the one I showed you earlier from Field to Market. Now, it's showing you that the 1981-85 was the outer blue, and then through the years, it started getting better as far as how the practices were helping you. You want to get in the tight center portion of this where you're not out of kilter with the soil or water or land or greenhouse gas. And so our 10-year goal is that center part. And so you can't have a mission of continuous improvement or goals placed for the industry without a program that can help achieve them. And so that's how the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol evolved, and that's why I'm here today. So the question is, what is the trust protocol and also why do we need it? Well, it's a single member LLC that's based within the National Cotton Council. However, it's back to that task force again. Many other organizations have been involved in this program with Cotton Incorporated, to CCI, to Cotton Board. Everybody all the organizations in cotton have been highly involved in this and making it to where it is today. As far as the governing structure of the board, I've got my own board, and it's I've got four producers, one ginner, one merchant, one cooperative, one cottonseed, one spinner, There's two civil societies, two brands and retailers, as well as two at large. And so, and a couple of those, we have the World Wildlife Fund, Environmental Defense Fund, a representative, Levi Strauss, Tesco, which is a big retailer out of London. Now back to what the protocol is about. It's about to make sure to stress the continuous improvement message as well as achieving those goals. But the program will also be able to provide aggregate data and provide this data through the supply chain to our brands and retailers. So the requirements to be a protocol participant as far as a producer, there's a self-assessment that's against defined standards. There's also there's a use of a data tool for environmental metrics, and then there's a verification process. Now, the self-assessment takes a look at the overall operation of that cotton producer, all of its practices. And there's nine categories on the self-assessment, and this is on a user-friendly site that we have, and I'll share that with you later. But there's nine categories, though: soil health, nutrient management, water management, crop protection, harvest preparation, wildlife habitat, fiber quality and traceability, farm management, and worker relations. And each category, there's two sets of questions. One set is required practices, which are pretty much government laws and regulations. And then the other set of questions are recommended practices. And the way those questions are answered are by four choices. They can answer, I do this now on my operation. I'm implementing it on one or more of my fields. I will consider in the next 3 years, or not appropriate for my farming operation. Now, a year ago, we were in this building where we had a couple of workshops where, as before we launched the pilot, we were asking for producers' input in this questionnaire, and so we took some of that input and changed it, and even in the pilot phase, we found some things that we'll be addressing, which I'll share with you in a little while. So I took a couple of screenshots from this from the self-assessment, and this is from our, it's called the producer dashboard, and this is under water management. Conserve and utilize natural rainfall and or tailwater through use of cover crops, terraces, furrow diking, holding ponds, reservoirs, or conservation tillage. This particular producer answered that with not appropriate for my farming operation. Another example would be utilize flow meters to measure water use. And this producer actually said, I do this now on most of my fields. So as the guys are going through and answering this, this data is being collected by the protocol, and it's useful information. But it's also given him opportunities to look inward at his operation. For questions about soil health, utilize conservation tillage practices such as minimum strip, mulch, or no-till. This producer answered that with, I'm implementing this on one or more of my fields. Sample questions for crop protection. Use licensed qualified consultants or certified crop consultants to monitor the crop and pest status and make recommendations for management. And he does that on most of his operation. So these are the type of questions that the producer will be seeing and answering. Now, as far as the breakdown with the categories that I mentioned earlier versus the required and recommended questions, it shows that, you know, you can see where a lot of them are crop protection to worker relations. That's a lot of your government laws and regulations that I mentioned to you. But if you really take it down to percentages, about a third of it is required practices, and then the remaining being recommended practices. The interesting thing about this this self-assessment, as once a producer finishes taking the self-assessment, he has the opportunity to review his answers, and he can then also select a little gray pie chart, and it can show where his answer ranks or where it is with all the other participants in that have already taken their self-assessment. So it kind of gives them a good idea. Almost, I like it. You know, I cut my grass at home, and I always look over at my neighbor's yard and wonder why his is better looking than mine. And it's kind of that, gives that kind of perspective for a producer of, well, why is he doing that? I answered it this way. Why is he answering it that way? And so it's just interesting information could help him. Now, back in 2 months ago, I took the participants who were in the protocol and received the way they answered their data. And there was, at that time, there were right about 175 that were in the protocol. And so the question here is, plant cover crops with a goal to have living roots on as many months of the year as possible to protect soil and improve soil organic matter. Well, out of the 175, about 82% of it are doing that practice in some way or fashion. You have 10% that say they'll consider doing it over the next 3 years, and then 8% say it's not appropriate for their operation. So if I was that producer that was sitting in that 10%, and I noticed that 82% of the 175 are already doing it, it might make me think, you know, maybe I should consider doing this. There must be some advantage to it. This next question is about water management planning. Conserve and utilize natural rainfall and or tailwater through use of cover crops, terraces, furrow diking, holding ponds, reservoirs, or conservation tillages. Well, out of 175, 159 of them have some type of water management plan in place. Very small amount over here that we'll consider it in 3 years to not appropriate. This was interesting. Sometimes the data talks to even the folks at the protocol, the developers and all that. This says here to utilize flow meters to measure water use. Well, you have 67% that are doing it, mostly on their fields or one or more. Well, 11% said they'll consider it in the next 3 years. 22% says not appropriate to their farming operation. Well, the way the self-assessment set up is as a producer's enrolling, he says he's irrigated or non-irrigated, and one thing that this shows is your dry land producers are saying this isn't appropriate for their operation. Well, the way we looked at this is we need to figure out a way to make this a better self-assessment rather than have it where they can answer it that way. So one thing we learned from the pilot is we're going to change the self-assessment where, as a producer, he can put in the percentage of irrigation he is when he's enrolling. And if he selects 0%, meaning he's dry land, then it's going to then withdraw a lot of the questions dealing with irrigation practices from the self-assessment. So it would be a better user experience for that producer. I can also share with you that there's some questions on there as well that aren't specifically for that area for that producer. You know, some recommended practices might not be for a West Texas producer as they would be for a Southeastern. And so we've also, through Cotton Incorporated and Technical Services, National Cotton Council, as well as Dr. Jordan, Andy Jordan, we've have now going to separate and personalize a self-assessment where it will be only for their region that they live in. Again, we're trying to make it a better user experience for the producer. This one now is use soil, climate, or plant-based measurements such as infrared guns or PET data to monitor soil and crop water status. And this is kind of interesting where it does, it's a balanced question as far as the way they answered it. It's and again, this kind of shows an area where it's not appropriate for their operation. Testing the drinking water, a lot of them are doing that, but some are considering it. 16% said they'll consider it over the next few years. Well, it might, as they read the question, some of them were like, well, yeah, I've got a well out there. I've never really had tested it, so I guess probably wouldn't be bad for me to do that. And then you have the few that up there that might be dry land. conservation tillage practices, utilize conservation tillage practices such as minimum strip, mulch, or no-till. And as you can see, it's a high percentage of our producers that are doing that in some way. Now, I can share you, as far as our pilot has gone, we reached out to producer leadership, and a lot of it were members of ACP, to Cotton Board, to Cotton Incorporated, to CCI, and we use that as our basis of asking these guys to be involved and to help be a part of the pilot. So now that was the overall farming operation as far as the answering questions with the self-assessment. Now it's kind of getting a little bit down into the closer into some details, and this is dealing with that field print platform that I mentioned to you from Field to Market. In order for a producer to be a member of the protocol, he needs to use the field print platform or any of the qualified data partners. And those data partners are LandDB, Agrible, TruTerra, and there's MyFarms, and I think that's Precision Ag. But so a producer will have to select 10% of his representing acreage and enter, again, quantitative and qualitative information into the platform, where then it will show him what his environmental footprint of his operation is. This is an example of one that, this is from a producer that was in Louisiana, and before he made any changes in his operation, he entered, he was conventional tillage, include the erodible area, the 150 acres that were cultivated, 50 acres that were poor productivity, average slope was 1.5%, and he cultivated the crop all the way to the bayou. Well, he changed his practices from 1 year to the next, and went to no-till. He excluded erodible area and went 50 acres into native vegetation. He cultivated a slope of 0.5%, and then he added a riparian buffer. And he entered this information into the field print platform. This is a picture of the riparian buffer. And so his spidergram, this is how it is when it's showing against those environmental metrics on that spidergram against what I showed you earlier. Here's before, here's after. You can see where it has improved. Soil loss decreased from 9 to 1. Soil carbon index increased. Greenhouse gas decreased. Energy uses decreased. And water quality index increased. This information here is what, if placed in aggregate form, the brands and retailers would really appreciate knowing this type of things. If you have all the producers who are part of the protocol, and we're able to share it and show that how the what the greenhouse gas is, a lot of these brands and retailers are wanting to make these claims, but they're wanting to have proof before they make them, and they're wanting some valid numbers to help them. The verification process. Verification will be, we have to make sure that there's an independent verifier, that a small percentage of the producers will be independently verified by a third party. He would be verifying the self-assessment and also the use of the data tool. He is, as we've been interviewing some of these companies, we are letting them know what our expectations are, and our expectations are to make sure they only verify what we're asking them to. They do not. They're not allowed to go in there to verify any other crop or look under a rock to try to find something that's wrong. That's part of the process of the verification. They need to verify our self-assessment and the use of the data tool. So that's the nuts and bolts of the program. But why do we need it? Again, it's about to drive continuous improvement, and the that spidergram there allows feedback back to the producer, shows him areas that he can improve, whether it be soil conservation or soil carbon or greenhouse gas emissions, whichever. But it also provides him where he can compare his results to state and national benchmarks. Again, why do we need it? To achieve our industry goals. Again, this goes back to the sustainability task force and setting those goals that are important for us. And six of the nine categories of the self-assessment directly relate back to those goals. Why to meet our customers' expectations? The needs of the customers vary, and you know, for years, a lot of our the brands and retailers, due to the Cotton Leads program, saw U.S. cotton as being sustainable. But what's happened through the years is they're wanting more information, as I said, and they need to have defined standards and a verification process to validate it. And so it's I think by 2023, 40 major brands and retailers will only buy 100% sustainable cotton, which means if we don't have a program in place like the Trust Protocol, then a lot of our U.S. cotton will be on the outside and looking in as far as markets. We need to make sure that we have that opportunity for U.S. cotton to be in all markets. Another reason why to reclaim market share, you know, as you all know, that through the years we've lost a lot of market share to synthetics, and as a merchant, as a past merchant, and talking to producers, we're always talking about how can we reclaim market share from synthetics. And you know, here's a good story as far as sustainable cotton and responsibly produced cotton, and it's something that It sits well with consumers and investors, and so it's a way that we could possibly grab some of that market share back from those synthetics. So the protocol, it's not about one producer being more responsible than another, or more one bale of cotton being sustainable and another one not. It's definitely not about one region of our country being better and sustainable practices than another. It's making sure that we are able to tell that story, the story of our industry from California to the Carolinas, about how great our producers are. We want to compete in every market and every supply chain, and we want to make sure the United States cannot afford to lose market access due to a perceived lack of sustainability. You know, we're poised to compete, to have big crops for years to come, and we just need to make sure that we have the demand base for it. And so that's why this program is important. So we're going to compete in every market and every supply chain, and we want to be the supplier of choice. We must meet the customer's needs for quality, cleanliness, timeliness, and sustainability. The protocol allows U.S. Cotton to tell an even stronger story to customers and provide support for their various reports. Now, brands and retailers, they're sustainability directors. They have to provide all kinds of reports, CSR reporting, some ESG criteria reporting, to UN sustainability goals reporting, to greenhouse gas. They have all these various reports. And so one thing that we're wanting to do is we're wanting to make a pledge. We want to make a pledge to brands and retailers where we can enable them to meet their sustainable goals. And so, however, whatever reporting they're needing, we are there to try to help them with our aggregate data. I think this is there's no other country in the world, maybe Australia, but no other country in the world that has the data that our producers have here in the U.S. I actually feel like as this is launched, that brands and retailers, I honestly feel that brands and retailers will want to buy U.S. cotton before any other bale of cotton in the world because of this. And so it's quite exciting to think about that.
When it comes to U.S. cotton, the standard is high. Through sophisticated machinery, seed technology, environmental stewardship, and detailed tracking systems, U.S. cotton is innovating at every step of the way. When sourcing cotton, brands also set high standards. They demand quality, consistency, and materials that are ethical and sustainable. They care about the journey throughout the supply chain. Consumers have high standards too, People want clothes they look good and feel good in. A crisp white shirt, a flowing summer dress, and the cozy pajamas you can't wait to put on at the end of the day. But consumer standards are changing. Increasingly, they care about the impact of what they wear on the wider world. Price matters, but clothes can't cost the earth. The U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol sets a new standard. It lets brands, businesses, and consumers trust in the cotton they buy, sell, and wear for today and for tomorrow. For many brands, it's the missing piece of the puzzle, giving them the confidence to add verified U.S. cotton to the sustainable cotton they already source and sell. It is a standard that benefits everyone, from the seed to the shop floor to the shelf, from the farmer who grows cotton to the family who wears it. U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, trust in a smarter cotton future.
Videos like this will be shared globally with brands and retailers over the next, starting I think in 6 to 8 weeks. So not only are we out trying to visit with producers and engage them in the program, we're also doing it with the brands and retailers. And so we'll start seeing demand, and then that's going to encourage the merchants and cooperatives to be involved as well. So our website is trustuscotton.org, and on this website, it's got a lot of information, and it's still it's fairly new, and we're tweaking it along the way, and it's got a lot of this information I shared with you today. But it does have a FAQ section where you can there's some commonly asked questions by producers, and we have our answers for it. And then there's also we're working on similar questions asked by the brands and retailers that will be available. Now, there's a login and also enrollment. A producer can currently enroll even now. The pilot for 2019 is still up and running. We now, as of this morning, we have 232 producers who have enrolled and are part of the protocol. That will allow the enrollment in the 2019 for guys to kind of dip their foot in the water and see what it's like. It's going to end at March. April 1st, the new and improved self-assessment and some other items that will be up on the producer dashboard will be available for the 2020 crop. Now, as far as visiting with producers, it's a four-pillar approach as far as this goes. Part of it is to make sure we're working on the awareness and the education of it. That's what I'm doing now, and that's whenever I'm out, I try to visit with folks about it, and other members of the employees of the National Cotton Council and Cotton Incorporated and Cotton Board. Everybody's trying to visit and educate the producers about it. And it's part of the engagement of one-on-one contact and where we can answer the questions that are in the back of everybody's mind and make sure that everybody feels comfortable about this program. And we have the registration and then the enrollment of it. Now, some of the producers, some of my buddies, they say, why do I need to do this? I mean, if I'm sustainable, why do I need to do it? My response is, why not? I mean, the self-assessment takes 30 to 45 minutes to take. The data, the online data, would on starting April 1st, it will be on our site itself, and it will take 45 minutes to an hour for the season to enter that field level data. So why not? It's only 2.5 hours of your time to do this. Why not be a part of a program that shares your story of sustainability, and it shares the story of how good our producers are across the cotton belt. A lot of globally, a lot of folks don't realize it, and they don't realize that our producers are good stewards of the land and good stewards of the environment and good stewards to their fellow employees that work with them. And so this is a perfect program that can help be that voice. Another why I'd be a part, reclaim market share, and it's also again about making sure that we're all that all U.S. cotton has the opportunity in all markets in the world.
Merchants and consumers want sustainable cotton. The good news is we already have it. The U.S. cotton industry leads the world in sustainable initiatives, from conserving soil and water to reducing inputs and greenhouse emissions. It's why we produce the highest quality cotton on the planet, and how we're going to continue to do so. When you sign up for the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, you're making a pledge to show the world just how sustainable we really are.
I'm in.
I appreciate your time, and the success of this program starts with the producers. It goes to the gin managers. It goes to the merchants and cooperatives. It's with consultants. It's with the suppliers for producers, and it's in with the academia. I mean, everybody needs to embrace this program and get involved and be a part and be in. I'd like to thank you for this. Thank you.